Welcome back to the Young Turks, everybody. It's Tuesday, and we have got a big show for you. Perhaps too big. I felt that a few times while I was preparing for today's show. Thankfully, I'm not going to be doing it alone. I am joined by Jennifer Briney, host of a Congressional Dish podcast.
Hello.
And I think that we've got some stuff for you to sink your teeth in, because I know that you're a big fan of the in-depth day-to-day analysis of what Congress is up to, what they're not up to. So if people tune into your podcast, what can they expect?
Yeah, so I look into the stuff that Congress is doing that most people aren't talking about. So I look into, I watch the hearings that are super long and boring, and I read the bills, and I just tell you what's going on from the perspective of someone who just wants to know what they're doing with my money. Mm-hmm. And so I do really deep dives into Congress, and so yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's the type of stuff I'm obsessed with.
I was just thinking, so I read there's none of the details have come out, but so I believe it's inside of the Texas legislature, some female legislators are compiling information about sexual harassment and sexual assault inside the legislature.
Okay.
Because it turns out that really old school Texans do inappropriate shit from time to time. And I wonder, in the US Congress, how much of that stuff goes on. If you actually had interns and pages and legislators actually say what's been going on, I feel like in the same way that Hollywood is a place that almost obviously breeds that sort of like excessive, you know,
boys club.
Yeah, I feel like the next one would have to then be
well, it's funny that you say that, and I wasn't prepared because I don't have the article.
It just occurred to me.
But there was an article.
This is not a tightly scripted show.
Yeah, there was an article recently, though, with women in Congress talking about how that does happen, and no one really talks about it. So that would be.
You should compile all of that information. That would make a good piece or a good movie.
It would. It would also be a good reason to clean house.
Yeah.
Get a lot of
that. We can add that to the list of reasons to clean house.
There's so many.
Yeah, actually, we're going to be starting off with that in just a second. But I forgot. I'm John, by the way. Thanks for tuning in. Also, we've got JR. He is, as always, JR rated over there. He's going to be perhaps chiming in from time to time. What you can expect on the show today, we're going to be starting off with some of the major elections going on across the country. As we speak, actually, the votes haven't come in, but the voting is happening. We're going to give you an update on the battle over the GOP tax bill. We've got Maine's legislature pretty brazenly striking back against the will of the people when it comes to reforming their voting system. And then we've got some more Republican hypocrisy and cliches on gun violence to close out the show. Hopefully we'll get to that. But as I said, we're going to be starting off with the elections. Although we've had special elections throughout the country throughout this year, we haven't had a big election day since the apocalypse last November. And so now, if you haven't voted yet, please pause this video, go and do that. We will be here when you come back. But if you have already voted, let's continue. There are a lot of elections going on, both for statewide offices, also important ballot measures. And we're going to be talking about all of them. The big one that everybody's talking about is this Virginia gubernatorial election, where you have Lieutenant Governor Ralph Northam, the Democrat, going against the former Republican National Committee Chairman Ed Gillespie. If you had like 3 years ago predicted what that race would look like, you know, with this longtime Republican insider, you would have assumed it would be a fairly, you know, boring and blasé race. But Gillespie has apparently been drinking whatever Trump was drinking during his election, because for whatever reason that campaign has been like it's sanctuary cities and it's Confederate monuments, and Gillespie is pitching himself as effectively, you know, a Republican for the alt-right in a lot of cases. I know that the polls originally had Northam up pretty significantly. I believe Hillary Clinton won Virginia by 5 points. Mm-hmm. And now the polls are showing that it's within just a couple of points. So we don't exactly know what's going to happen.
Yeah. And I'm concerned about this one mainly for, as a congressional nerd, I'm concerned for redistricting reasons.
Yeah.
Because this Ed Gillespie is that how I say it?
Gillespie, yeah.
Yeah, he was one of the people that was the architect of Project Red Map. So they're not even hiding what they're doing. They're just redistricting so that the Republicans can't lose.
Yeah.
And so for him to be the guy, the problem with Virginia is that their legislature is controlled by Republicans. And so we would like to have a Democrat there to veto any shenanigans.
Yeah.
And if Gillespie's the guy, like, that veto ain't coming.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my biggest concern. And even though I know that there's some people that are concerned about Northam because he's very centrist and he said some things about sanctuary cities at his we have concerns.
Yeah.
But this point, we do have to do lesser of two evils. We do. So I'm rooting for the Democrat here because Ed Gillespie is a big problem.
Yeah, I've been reading up on him. Look, I'm not going to lie. It's not a race that I was following very closely until like the last week or so. Mm-hmm. Like I knew in the background it's going on, but you know, you can only hold so many things in your mind simultaneously. And I've been reading up on him, and he, since becoming lieutenant governor back in 2014, has been sort of, I guess he's been reading the political winds and he's been moving in the right direction in terms of his rhetoric and everything on, you know, abortion rights and a host of other issues for the most part. But that's, we want someone who was strong because it was right and it's what they believe, not necessarily just because they think it's politically expedient. As you alluded to, there's the sanctuary cities issue. And so that's been coming up throughout this race. Gillespie saying that he wants to, as governor, ban sanctuary cities, which is urgent because Virginia currently has zero sanctuaries. It doesn't have any. What are you talking about, you ass? But he wants to ban them, and so he kept bringing it up. He kept bringing it up, and Northam was, you know, speaking out against this, saying, you know, that we have to have respect and also protections for various, you know, people who are could theoretically be abused by the state, and then. As the attacks go on, he gets worn down, the poll's starting to tighten up, and then he starts implying that he might be willing to do something about sanctuary cities. In the short term, I guess there's no harm since there aren't any, but there are inclusive cities which don't technically have the internal capacity to break state law in the way the sanctuary cities do, but they have these sort of aspirational goals. Hopefully, as governor, he wouldn't go against that. But obviously, this is exactly what the Republicans in 2017 want you to do. They want you to take a race that has consequences for redistricting and a number of other issues, and then focus on these bullshit issues. Not that it's bullshit to have the sanctuary cities, but they don't have sanctuary. They literally don't have them right now. Yeah. And he wants you to talk about Confederate monuments and all of that. And so it's going to be interesting to see who wins, because if Gillespie wins by a couple points and it turns out that he is beating the polls with this sort of new approach, that's not good. That doesn't look good for the next year or two.
No.
For future races.
It's so frustrating to watch stuff like this because it's like the Democrats are taking the bait. You know, like this is a non-issue in Virginia. If we're talking about California governor, like, okay, fine, then it's worth talking about. In Virginia, why is this an issue?
Yeah.
And so he's taking the bait and he's going further to the right instead of further to the left.
Like exactly.
He's appealing to the Republicans' base, not his own. And it's just, it's the Democratic Party for you.
Yeah, yeah, that is for sure. And we were talking about in our production meeting, what best case scenario, I guess, the Democrat actually wins and becomes governor. And then the legislature votes to strip of all of his power like they did in North Carolina. So maybe we have that to look forward to. Well, we have a great system in America. But as we said, he does have a slight lead right now. Gillespie has not, although his tactics have been mimicking Trump in several different ways, he hasn't necessarily been trying to tie himself to Trump specifically. Maybe because Trump is at like 32, 33, 34% approval ratings throughout the country. But Trump has been tweeting about Gillespie and about Northam and all that quite a bit. So,
which works we'll see what effect that has. Luther Strange.
Exactly, yes. Yes, so we'll see if that actually has any effect. But that's not the only governor's race going on. Not far away, we have New Jersey, where we might at long last be seeing the backside of Chris Christie. I should word that differently. But we've been dealing with him for a long time. He is, I believe at one point was polled as the least popular governor since they had begun polling the popularity of governors. He was at like the low teens or something like that. And so now we have Democrat Phil Murphy versus Republican Kim Guadagno. And there's been, I think, consistently a double digit lead for the Democrat in this particular case. So we'll see about that.
Sounds safer.
Yeah, hopefully the bridges will be a little bit more accessible.
And the beaches.
And the beaches as well. Man, he just doesn't like those things. Now this is a race that theoretically, and again, nobody's perfect. We could find reasons to be worried about what effect this guy might have. But here you have a fairly strong blue state. Many of the efforts that they have made to pass liberal pieces of legislation have been vetoed by Chris Christie. With Murphy in place, you might have progress on these issues. So Murphy supports legalization of marijuana. is proposing a tax hike on rich individuals and corporations inside of New Jersey. Let's see, promise to extend state level protections to undocumented immigrants, which would be a switch from Christie. And again, he is going to sign bills. He's pledged to sign bills that Chris Christie has previously vetoed. One of which, by the way, is a raise for the minimum wage to $15 per hour. Not immediately, it's a gradual thing, which isn't optimal, but it certainly will be nice for the people living in New Jersey. And that is a change you can get if Murphy does win there. So that's something.
That's something.
That's something to look forward to, I guess.
Yeah.
Let's see, we also have, you got de Blasio. I don't think anybody is really questioning how exactly that's going to go down in New York. So that will be assured by tonight. And then you have a couple of ballot initiatives that are certainly worth covering. So one is in Maine. We're going to be talking about Maine a couple of times in this hour. And that is a ballot initiative that would expand Medicaid coverage to 70,000 low income residents in Maine. This is something that, and by the way, there's been this campaign against this ballot initiative saying that this would cost too much. The state would just can't afford to extend Medicaid to these low income individuals. The federal government would be picking up 90% of the tab. Think about the good that can be done inside of Maine if this gets passed at almost no cost to Maine. So that's something that they want to do. And bear in mind, there has been attempted Medicaid expansion five times in Maine. That was vetoed every single time by the Republican governor, Paul LePage.
Did they never, after the Affordable Care Act, Maine never did the Medicaid expansion? So this would be their first time?
This is a particular aspect of Medicaid expansion, but this aspect has been shot down multiple times. Okay. I'm not sure how much the general campaign got, but this is one that the Republicans in that state have been dead set against. And five vetoes, that's a lot of effort to stop people who can't afford their health insurance from getting it. And so again, hopefully people are voting. It's difficult to say. Polls won't close, I think, until the end of this hour. So we won't know, even if it was immediately apparent, we won't know until after this hour. But I have read a couple of reports that anecdotal evidence is that in certain neighborhoods, there appears to be less voting than there was the last time around in Virginia. That's probably not, when you're talking about a difference of about 3% in the polls, a change in turnout is pretty significant. But I know that a lot of people are watching this. A lot of people are going to try to say a lot about where the country is at and where it's going based on these results. I don't know how accurate that ever is, but this is a significant voting day after a lot of smaller special elections. And so hopefully I have some good news tomorrow.
Yeah, but we also have to keep in mind that in this country, unless the last digit on the year is even, a lot of people don't even know that they're voting today.
Yeah,
they'll
exactly.
Wake up and just be like, oh, there was an election. And yeah. They find out on the news that night. So that's also a problem that we have, that we don't, these off-year elections, they don't get the turnout because the news doesn't get out there.
Yeah, that's
true.
We're
dorks, we're aware of it.
Yeah.
But a lot of other people aren't.
That is true, it's been said. I mean, hopefully with social media, that's helping at least the people. I mean, not that, like if you take Twitter, Twitter is not a representative sample of the United States by any means. It's people who are already self-selected to be more invested in news and politics generally. But that can serve as a reminder, and hopefully those people go out and, you know, alert their neighbors and all of that. I don't know. It could be that very few people turn out.
I certainly
wouldn't be out of the norm for America.
Yeah. So
the thing. Oh, you're involved in the conversation now, JR. It looks like you're a nerd.
But thing is, they keep talking about, and to your point, Jen, the referendum on this being the bellwether for what may happen with the midterms, with when everyone is somewhat paying attention, still not even fully because it's not a presidential election. But it's frustrating because that said so much, but it's true that not many people even know that it's election day, that they who they're voting for, what reasons they're voting for people, but we still count that as a sign of what may happen. How is it when they're not paying attention, but many more people pay attention when it's going to happen? So it actually, this whole idea of us, this being what's going to happen in the next midterm election doesn't really make a lot of sense because it's not the same attention that's given to both elections.
Yeah, well, I mean, one thing that I think we have to remember is that at least not necessarily for the ballot initiatives, although money is spent to advertise those, I think that the main Medicaid expansion at least like the one big anti-organization spent, I think, $500,000, and the big for it said they spent $2.5 million. I'm not sure if that's the case, but that's one thing that I read. There will be advertising for that, but for the statewide elections, there are still, you know, TV commercials. Like, there's not a lot of strong evidence that TV commercials really sway elections that much, but they do let people know that an election is coming up, and they also generally cause you to hate both the candidates. They do those two things, and so hopefully, at least if you're living in those states, or if you have the misfortune of living in a media market but not in the state, I apologize that you have to watch those ads. But that does at least serve to remind people that it's coming up. Like, we're not getting those ads here necessarily, but you know, for all the elections in Washington and New Jersey and Virginia, hopefully they do know.
For sure. But even reading these articles today, it was like, if the Democrats don't win in Virginia, they're done in 2018. It's like, mm-hmm. I don't think so. I'm getting a lot of people emailing me about the midterms, which has never happened before. Mm-hmm. So there is more excitement for the midterms. And I just don't think that what happens today is something that we should be taking as a sign of things to come.
Yeah.
And I think you and I are in agreement on that. It's just, there's a lot of overreaction to the off-year elections that I hope that we don't participate in going forward.
I'll grant you that it's probably not the case that what happens today really, really matters for next year, but it feels good to say that it's true.
It gives you some hope.
Yeah.
If everything goes well.
It's like gambling. It's like political gambling. But anyway, that's what's going on. Hopefully, if you live in one of those places, whether you're voting in the statewide elections, you know, there's a lot of mayoral elections going on in a number of big cities, actually. Important attorney general positions. I think Philadelphia's got a really intense AG race going on. Also, the ballot initiatives. If you haven't voted and still can in those areas, a lot of these things do matter. So please get out there and do that. With that, we are going to take our first break. And when we come back, we've got the latest on the battle over the Republican attempts to reform the tax code. Let's see how they're doing. We'll be back after this. Welcome back to the first hour of the Young Turks, everybody. I'm John, and I'm joined by Jennifer. We're trying to break down some of what's happening across the country today. I'm trying to get my tweets available. There we go. Let's read some of the tweets you guys are sending in. Hashtag TYT Live. Crayfish Caddy has a reference to a story we covered on yesterday's show saying, good thing Rand Paul has government provided insurance to cover medical expenses. That is a good point. No, I feel bad for the guy. It seems like he really got the shit beat out of him. And by the way, I would like to give credit to Donald Trump for not yet mocking him on Twitter for that. I know that someone probably had to stop him from tweeting. Let's see. Ashley B says, I hope you all went and voted today. I agree. And Kara Curley, I believe this is a reference to when we were talking about Donald Trump tweeting about the Virginia governor's race, saying he can say whatever he wants. His supporters have no clue what's actually going on in the first place. Knowledge and curiosity have died. And I don't know that I am ready to say that. But yes, people seem to be getting more insular, more tribal. There's just more and more. Like, it seems sometimes that on the internet, there are cults of personality and cat pictures and nothing else. And cults of personality for particular cats. But that people, like, everybody thinks that they're a critical thinker. Everybody thinks that I'm the one who gets my media from a diverse range of sources, but nobody seems to actually want to do it in practice.
Yeah.
And it's not just Trump supporters.
I think I spend too much time on the internet. Mm-hmm. And it's like when I go off the internet and I hang out with people, I actually have a much better view of or feeling about how this country is. Because in my day-to-day life, I don't find people screaming at each other. I don't find these political fights. I find it in the screen.
Yeah.
And outside of it, we're actually okay. So I'm blaming us a little bit less than I am the media in the echo chamber. Because you have the craziest of our country screaming at each other online. Everyone else is just sitting back going, I don't know what this is. I'll vote in 2 years. But like, there's a lot of people staying silent, not participating in this, and they give me hope.
Or they're just watching reruns of the Big Bang Theory.
That's true.
Yeah. But also, and to answer to this, the supporters' knowledge and curiosity have died. I know every time we report on something terrible that Trump has said or done, a lot of people will be like, why are you even bothering with this? It's never going to have an effect. His supporters are you know, cultists. And I think that there's people like that. But I also saw a poll today that amongst non-college educated white voters, you know, the people that stereotypically are big Trump supporters, since the 100-day mark, his approval has fallen 13 points among that group. And that's the core. Yeah. I mean, 13 points, that's significant. That can affect a re-election bid, theoretically. So let's not get caught. Like, Yes, it's super difficult to get people to realize things they don't want to realize. You have to continually jam it in their face and hope that they'll be reasonable. But it does happen if slowly. Anyway, let's move on to taxes for a bit. The pressure is currently on for Republicans to deliver something, something big on taxes. Not to deliver for their voters, sorry if I led you to believe that. I mean for the donors, of course. Many of the Republican voters, you know, the regular run-of-the-mill people, will end up either getting nothing or very little from this tax bill. Some, apparently 1 in 5 in a study I saw, might end up paying more taxes. But for wealthy individuals, for corporations, this is potentially an amazing bill. And those donors want to see that it happens. And it could be that if they don't deliver this, they're in for some big trouble. And so we're going to turn to that in a second. But first, the revisions of the bill are going on right now. And as you pointed out earlier, we don't actually have the text of it. We don't know exactly what's going to happen. And so we're getting reports coming out of some committee meeting hearings, trying to get an idea of what they might be modifying. We've got a significant one for you. So this was tweeted. If we can bring up this tweet, you'll see this is significant. Look at that from Jim Tankersley. The Ways and Means spokesman confirms that the SALT is the state and local tax deduction. So that was one of the big things in the new bill that would have hurt regular people, not being able to deduct your state and local taxes. So it's gone for individuals, stays for pass-throughs. And what that means basically is summed up in the bigger tweet, is that a regular person is not going to be able to deduct their state and local taxes. But corporations will be able to, and rich individuals who create these dummy corporations that they funnel their personal income through effectively, people who have the capacity to do that, will still be able to deduct state and local taxes in what is apparently the most recent draft. And so that is just another thumb in the eye of regular Americans. That they have to pay for this thing one way or another, and one way is to take away tax breaks, not tax breaks for wealthy, powerful, connected people, but for regular people who might not even know that this is going on. And so we were talking during the break about this battle to get this passed. My belief is that the only thing potentially stopping it from being passed is how far they're trying to go in one step. They might be trying to get too much, driving up the deficit too much. Turning off, there's a couple of Republican senators who've come out and said they won't vote for anything that raises it as much as it currently does. Mm-hmm. I mean, what do you think? I know that you're less optimistic that it will be stopped.
I don't think it's going to be stopped. Mm-hmm. I think they're going to get this one because people like the idea of paying less in taxes. You know, it's just, they're saying that it's going to be $1,000 each of us get to keep. And like, okay, you know, the healthcare mm-hmm. thing they lost because that was about life and death issues. It was taking away people's access to doctors. It was a really easy one to understand. But when it comes to cutting taxes, I mean, even when you talk about deducting state and local taxes, I mean, my eyes glaze over and I love this shit. So it's like, I just don't see the groundswell of opposition happening with tax cuts the way it did with healthcare.
Yeah.
And I think they're going to get it. And even though there's some Republican squabbling, because there are people in the Republican Party, especially on the Tea Party side, that really do want to do something about the debt and the deficit. They're serious about that. So they could be somewhat of a problem, but they're vastly outnumbered in the House. Mm-hmm. I think there are people in the House on the Democratic side that vote with Republicans quite consistently that mm-hmm. might jump over the side of the aisle. I just don't
see. That's the fear.
Yeah, I just don't see this dying.
Yeah, look, I mean, what we have to hope is that there's strong opposition inside of government to the plan to try to scare, you know, a couple people, and also to try to get some of those conservative Democrats to stay in line, as they did on the healthcare bill and a few other significant bills. But I think that it is really going to come down to the people watching this program, people across this country, making clear that this is something they will vote based on. Mm-hmm. Like, we can't afford defections, and we want to scare some Republicans, like happened with healthcare, to vote the right way, especially in the Senate where the margin for error is negligible. I mean, considering the way they're going to pass this, they can lose 2 or 1. They can lose 1, I think. They can lose 2. Mm-hmm. If they lose 3, it loses. And so we need to put pressure on them. You're right about the state and local taxes probably does make people's eyes glaze over. One of the reasons I focus on that is for most Americans, if that goes through, that's a noticeable, significant
100%.
Hit to you. And it's something that we do. Like, there's, well, I don't know about you, but when I do my taxes, there's a whole lot in that thing that I don't even know what it is, and I know I don't qualify for it. but I do deduct my state and local taxes. That's one of the few things we get. And that's why we focus on things like that they want to take away the deduction for interest you pay on your student loans.
Yeah.
Like how many people watching this program right now are buried in student loan debt and they just want to walk like and then just press down on the stuff burying you, just make it a little bit heavier.
And the medical expenses. They want to get rid of that one too. But that's one of those things that like all of this, not just that I get why you focus on those deductions, but I'm just saying like all of the details of taxes, I just don't think that many people understand it, pay that close attention. They hear tax cut, they go, cool. Mm-hmm. I just think it's that simple. I mean, you do TurboTax, you hope it works out, you don't get audited. I mean, a lot of us are very basic when it comes to taxes, and I'm speaking as one of them.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah. I just don't understand what all of the minutia of this issue is, and I think a lot of people are just going to tune it out, let it go through. I mean, that's my crystal ball. I don't actually know, but I don't have a lot of faith in us understanding or caring enough about tax cuts to stop it. I hope I'm wrong.
So what about some of the pushback they're getting from groups like the Club for Growth? So
that's
Club for Growth apparently not super excited about this bill. We've got a statement from their president who said, while the corporate tax cut will lead to some increase in our nation's GDP, yeah, that's why they want it. that's why they want the corporate tax cut. The rest of the provisions on individual taxpayers fails the pro-growth test. I agree with them there. I don't think that these tax cuts will lead to growth, mm-hmm. but I think we disagree about why exactly. He went on to say, The group called the higher taxes on the wealthiest Americans, which that's not true. I don't understand what that's a reference to because I have kept looking over this. But they say that that's class warfare, the likes of which would make Democrats green with envy. It also said the cuts to the pass-through tax rate was too small. So they get this cut to the pass-through rate. It means many millionaires and billionaires will be able to pay a tiny fraction of what they're currently paying for the majority of their income. But that's too small. God, these people are arrogant. And said that there's no reason to wait to repeal the estate tax. I don't know a lot of billionaires. Maybe this dude knows a lot of billionaires that are like just on the edge of kicking the bucket and they gotta get that thing passed right now. I don't know why you have to rush it so much. But they're saying that this isn't enough.
Yeah. That's the crazy in the
that's
party.
That's bananas.
Yeah, that's the crazy in the Republican Party. And that's kind of why John Boehner's no longer there. There is this wing that's so extreme that if they don't get everything that they ask for, then they're just not going to support it. They're fun to watch because they're the one tanking a lot of this stuff. So that my hope is actually in this wing of the Republican Party. If this is going to go down, they're going to be the ones to do it. The Democrats, they're on the sidelines on this one. But there is a crazy wing.
Yeah, and I mean, they're cutting the corporate tax rate from that, like by 40%, I think is the amount.
From 35 to 20.
To 20. I don't know. I'm not good at math, but that's something like 40%, right? It's somewhere around there.
I have no idea.
That's like we already have effectively an aristocracy in this country, a political and a financial aristocracy. Generally, it's the same thing. They're jammed together, and this is just like throwing like quick grow on it, like. These corporations are already hoarding money. There is effectively zero evidence that showering these corporations with money will lead to one job actually coming from this. And yet they're going to do it. We've been through this. Like you were alive under Bush, right? You saw the tax cuts that they had, the massive amount of money that they gave. It doesn't produce jobs. Let's actually, let's jump ahead for 1 second to that because TYT Investigates has been looking into this and they found one particular ironic example of that disconnect between the rhetoric coming out about what these tax cuts will accomplish and what we know they will actually accomplish based on experience. So if we could jump to graphic 24, you're gonna see a tweet from Rand Paul. So he says there, the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, I thought it was called the Cuts Act, will create nearly 1 million new jobs. And if you were to click on that, you'd see that's not just him guessing. That actually comes from a report by the Nonpartisan Tax Foundation. Now, one of the execs on the Tax Foundation is David Lewis. And so David Lewis helping to produce this report from the Nonpartisan Tax Reform. They just always want tax reform, but they're not partisan. Fine. And then Paul Ryan gets to say that it's going to create the jobs because that's interesting. David Lewis is not just some academic who runs stats, regressions. He's formerly the executive director, corporate tax and chief tax executive for Eli Lilly and Company. And so That's a corporation that has had experience with big tax cuts before. And you can go to our website and you'll see the full breakdown of what TRT Investigates found. But in effect, Eli Lilly back in 2004, when we had this tax holiday, which is my favorite type of holiday, by the way. Oh man, my mom used to cook some great food for those. They repatriated $8 billion. They brought it back into the country at a lower tax rate that was allowed to them by the Republicans. It was 5.25%, which is crazy. That's like duty, basically. Nothing. Like it was almost duty free to bring the money back in. And so this company, Eli Lilly, that had the chief tax exec that now is producing stuff that Rand Paul is using to push his plan, got $8 billion at almost no taxes. So man, they must have just grown and grown and grown. But for some reason, no. In 2004, when that happened, they had 22,751 domestic employees. 3 years later, that had dropped by 10%. As of today, it's lower than 19,000. So they've lost 15 to 18% of their workforce after being showered in billions of effectively tax-free dollars. So why would we believe that doing it again is gonna do anything other than enrich executives like the dude putting out that report?
Because they're lying.
That's what it is, actually. I think that's probably what it is, actually. Hold on, I'm gonna write to them to update the article. They're lying.
Yeah, I mean, they'll just say these things because they sound good, knowing that people aren't gonna pay attention. They're just lying.
So your prediction is that before Thanksgiving, it's gonna pass, and it's gonna pass on the first go through? Because I don't know if you know, but this is on a constrained timeline. Before Thanksgiving, they wanna get this thing done. A massive rewriting of the tax code and a handoff of literally trillions of dollars. They wanna get it done in like 2 weeks.
I don't actually think they're gonna pull that off, because we're also forgetting about some other huge deadlines that they have on December 8th.
What's that?
So we have to fund the entire government for 2018. They were supposed to do this in 12 separate bills that were carefully crafted in committee, and they never do that on time. It was due on September 30th, got none of them done. And so they pushed their deadline off until December 8th. Also on December 8th, we have to raise the debt ceiling. Mm-hmm. So we have two giant things that need to be done on December 8th, and they're gonna do this by Thanksgiving. I don't think so. Maybe the House will pass something, but I don't see this being signed. Because they also, again, we don't have the bill yet.
Yeah, we don't know what it is.
Yeah, that the more details
that didn't really
come
stop
out.
Them on a couple iterations of the healthcare bill.
Well, I mean, the House can vote multiple times on this, and we might see something like that. But the more details come out, the more these Club for Growth people start arguing, and then there's media reports about like, oh, middle class people are gonna get hit with tax increases. Like, oh God, we have to edit that. So you're seeing the edits happen already. These people are very big on pushing their deadlines. I highly doubt by the time we're eating turkey, we're gonna have something passed both the House and the Senate. It sounds ridiculous to me, knowing how much they have to do before Christmas.
Okay, fingers crossed. But
that's not to discourage you from like writing to them and
voicing that should encourage
you. You have to do it now.
Yes, that could happen if people take this seriously and bash them in the face over it. Now that said, we do have to take our second break. When we come back, we've got an awesome story coming out of Maine, where the people banded together in a ballot initiative and pushed for a big change the way elections are run. And the legislature said, not so fast. And we're gonna have that for you when we come back. Welcome back to the Young Turks. I'm John, joined by Jennifer. Having a good conversation. We got a lot more for you, starting with a few more of your tweets. Let's see. The math magician, I really like this tweet, said, this isn't a tax bill any more than the Republican healthcare plan was a healthcare bill. It's reparations to rich people for the crime of the New Deal. Hashtag social Darwinism. Yeah, and I tweeted something to the effect of, don't think of this as a tax bill, think of it as a non-consensual charity bill. Like, this provides an easy way for you at a cost of just $1,000 to $2,000 a year to provide for a billionaire in need. Now, we don't know if they're gonna send you like a picture of the billionaire like each month, and maybe he'll write you a little note, but that would be nice. I think they should add that. Let's see, Vance also tweeted, the people not participating, being silent, don't know what is really happening. It frightens me that there are people still indifferent to the status quo of our government when they are at risk of losing everything and they don't even know it. Vance apparently has access to 280 character long tweets, which I don't. So I'm jealous of Vance. That was the longest tweet I've seen so far. But you are 100% right, not to detract from your message there. I also want to do our member shout outs. Two members we want to recognize on the show today, Matthew Daniel and Sarah Reed. Thank you for supporting TYT and allowing us to do this. With that, let's jump into a really interesting story that was suggested by a TYT viewer. I haven't seen much in the news about this, but it is certainly important and indicative of what we can expect as we continue to attempt to reform this country. Last year, voters in Maine passed a ballot initiative to switch their voting system over to what's called a ranked choice voting system. Now, there's a good chance if you're watching this show, you are familiar with what that is. It was talked about a good amount during the last round of primaries because it's widely seen as one of the ways, among other things, that it's intended to fix a lot of problems that third party candidates could potentially make more headway in US elections. Now, it's important to know that up until right now in the US, it's used for some types of elections in 11 US cities, uniformly blue cities. But they passed this ballot initiative in Maine to switch over their voting system. Not for presidential races, just for the statewide races, but it is certainly something. Now, if you're not familiar with this or how it would actually function, here's a brief overview, although I recommend you read more up on this because there's a lot of interesting information. Instead of casting a ballot for a single candidate the way you do now, the voter would rank all of their candidates by preference. So if there were four people running for, you know, Congress, you would say, I vote this guy number one, her number two, them number three, whatever. If no one wins a majority on the first round of voting, which is actually often the case in a lot of races, the candidate with the fewest votes would be eliminated. For voters, that means if the eliminated candidate was your first choice, your second choice vote would be applied in the next round of counting. And so the idea there is, right now, you have to make this decision between backing one candidate. And if it's a candidate that doesn't have a very high chance of voting, in many cases, it might be that in terms of affecting the election, votes could be wasted. That may not be the right term, but the candidate doesn't get voted for or doesn't get elected. But with this sort of system, you could vote for whoever you want. And if there's no plurality, if they get 3%, 5%, 10%, and nobody gets over 50%, then your second place candidate would still have your support. And so it would free people up to support candidates that right now the system sort of tries to stop you from supporting. Mm-hmm. And that's not the way everyone would describe the system, but that's one of the ways that I see it anyway. Now, this is not common in the US, as I said, but ranked choice voting is used in Ireland and Australia. Also, it's how they pick Oscar nominees for Best Picture, which I thought was an interesting little fact. They passed it in a ballot initiative. Look at that. People in Maine decide that the way the system works right now isn't delivering the results that they want. And they're not just looking to get one person in there. They're looking to change the system, to take matters into their own hands because the legislature wouldn't act. Unfortunately, then the legislature did act and they delayed the law's execution until 2021. Which in my experience is their way of delaying it until the end of time. Because that's a lot of time to delay and delay and delay. And so under the current system, lawmakers will have until the 2022 elections, when you have the choice to vote for Donald Trump Jr. or Eric Trump, to amend the law to make it constitutional or else face a full repeal. So not only is it delayed, but it will only go into effect at that point if they also amend the Constitution. And so all the people who worked so hard to pass this ballot initiative were like, no, you're not just gonna shut down our efforts. And so as of today, I believe it was today, a judge has decreed that they can have 90 days to collect over 60,000 signatures to place a people's veto of effectively the veto on the ballot. And so that's a lot of signatures to gather in a short period of time in a state like Maine. But today, actually, there are hundreds of volunteers going around the state trying to gather those signatures. This is something that already had a lot of support in Maine. And now I think after the Republican attempt to shut it down, people should be more interested in this. They should be more passionate about this issue. So hopefully you have already sought out and put down your signature for that if you live in Maine.
Yeah, and actually if you live in Maine, you can go to them. You don't have to wait for them to come to your door. It's the Committee for Ranked Choice Voting Maine, or RCV Maine. So go to them, make it easy, sign their petition, and then get your ballot initiative.
Exactly.
But yeah. How many times does Maine have to vote to get the same thing? Poor Maine.
At least a few times. And that's the thing that scares me. So thank you for pointing that out. Don't wait for them to come to you. It's a small state, but a couple hundred people could still not get to you. Go find them, and if you have a little bit of extra time, maybe you can help to gather signatures. I mean, 60,000 ain't nothing, but if enough people sign up, each person only has to get so many signatures, and then the people's will can actually be made into law. And importantly, as was supposed to be the case in US history, we've got 50 states. There's supposed to be these laboratories of democracy where we can try something out in one state or 5 or 10 and see, you know, how it's going. Like Colorado just passed how many years with legal marijuana, 5 or something? Last time I checked, it wasn't Mad Max there. So apparently it doesn't have to destroy your country. These things are useful. So it would be great to see Maine using that. Now, just a little bit of background on why it is that the Republicans might have shut this down. You should know that the state's current governor, Republican Paula Page, first took office in a three-way race in which he got only a plurality of the vote in a contest against Democratic and independent candidates. I've run all the numbers, but it's possible that had they had that system, he would not be governor today. And he wouldn't have been there to make racist remarks about out-of-state drug dealers. And he wouldn't have been there to shut down expansion of Medicaid to low and middle-income Mainers. So that would have been interesting. It's also possible that if in other cases, like if in the Republican primary, if they had run that through ranked choice, I don't think Donald Trump would be your president right now.
Maybe not.
Because you had the establishment weak spineless Republican vote split amongst a whole bunch of establishment weak spineless individuals. And that wouldn't have necessarily been the case had they had something like this. Anyway, one other thing that I wanted to mention though is that this, I'm not saying it's a pattern yet, but the legislature shutting down this sort of effort reminded us here at TYT of another thing that happened. And that was in South Dakota when the people passed a anti-corruption ballot measure. And so what that was designed to do was it stopped certain sorts of gifts being given from lobbyists to politicians. It set up an independent organization in government to check for corruption and things like that. It was wider than that, but that was a few of the things that they did. And the legislature just said, no, we're not gonna let you set this up to constrain our activities, and they shut it down. And so it's great to see people getting out there and trying to reform the system, but we have to make sure that the politicians don't shut down those reforms before they can do what they're intended to do.
So amen.
Amen. Hopefully that'll happen. Anyway, this is just the beginning of that period of getting the signatures. I know we've got a lot of really dedicated, passionate people across the country. If this is an issue that you care about, this is an opportunity to actually get something done in that regard. So please look up more information. A lot more is available online.
Well, and I find it fascinating that one of the arguments against it is like, it's so hard. It's too complicated. Like, how hard is it to rank 1 through 4?
Yeah.
Like, how dumb do you think we are? Like, Americans are not that stupid.
Yeah, by the way, the only thing there is on the internet anymore is top 10 lists. We are so trained in ranking things right now, cheeses and Kardashians, I think we can rank politicians. There ain't that many names in the list, okay? That is a great point. It's too complicated. Yeah, that's why you oppose it. I can't count to 4. Anyway, let's switch things up for our last story. Saudi Arabia has been roiled with conflict over the past few days, and it's conflict of both a domestic and an international sort. You have this internal power struggle where people have been rounded up, powerful, wealthy people inside of Saudi Arabia have been rounded up. And then you also have an increasing in the conflict in their ongoing war with Yemen, where over the weekend, a ballistic missile was fired from inside of Yemen targeting an airport near Saudi Arabia's capital, something that had not yet happened in this conflict. That missile was shot down. It didn't actually reach its target, but in response, Saudi Arabia launched what has been pitched as, or reporters are saying, is the biggest, most damaging round of airstrikes in any one period since the conflict began. This is a conflict, by the way, that has already killed more than 10,000 civilians. Some people are saying over 13,000, and it's destroyed so much infrastructure that 7 million people are on the brink of famine. And Yemen has been the site of some of the worst cholera outbreaks in recent world history, which this is not the sort of history that you want to be making. Understand, of course, and we've talked about this multiple times, this is a conflict that the US has been aiding the Saudi coalition on by refueling their planes, providing intelligence and logistics, aerial support and things like that. And so this is not a thing that we are innocent on, thanks to Donald Trump's extremely close relationship with the Saudi government. He, for whatever reason, I don't understand it. Alex Jones can't explain it. Is a big fan of them. And that continued yesterday with him saying that he has great confidence in King Salman and the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia. They know exactly what they're doing. Some of those they are harshly treating have been milking their country for years. Now, that is not a reference to the war. That's a reference to the domestic conflict. And here's how that has looked. Earlier this year, the king sacked two sitting crown princes. This weekend, he sacked the commander of the Saudi Arabian National Guard. That is a 100,000 soldier strong unit that's supposed to protect the royal family. Damn, they have a lot of bodyguards. That's a lot. But that was the leadership of that was turned around. And there was a greater purge in which 11 princes, four ministers, and dozens of officials and businessmen were all arrested. And then those are the people that are still alive. Two princes were killed. One is rumored to have been shot while resisting arrest. I don't think the shot part is the rumor. I think the resisting arrest part is the rumor. And also another prince died in a helicopter crash near the Yemeni border along with a number of other government officials. Now, that is a thing that could happen, certainly. It's also suspiciously timed, although maybe we'll find out more in the future. And so that is the area that Donald Trump is apparently in favor of, says that these sorts of roundups done for anti-corruption purposes are potentially a good thing. What is your reaction to these situations?
I don't think he knows what he's talking about. Mm-hmm. I don't think that he has the foreign policy experience to understand the inner dynamics of the Saudi royal family. But I just know that in my lifetime, I've never seen the Saudi royals do this to each other.
Yeah, certainly you know? Not this much at once.
No, I've never seen anything like this. I mean, mm-hmm. It just kind of seems, and we've talked about the, you know, the Yemen factor in Saudi Arabia, but what's interesting is they had this bomb that the Yemenis are saying, we did it. Like, yeah. We're trying to bomb your airport in Saudi Arabia. But Saudi Arabia is saying, oh no, this was Iran's fault. Mm-hmm. So that's weird. And then Lebanon is somehow involved. It just seems like everything's hitting the fan in a really, really scary way.
Yeah.
And when it comes to Saudi Arabia, I mean, we have supported them with weapons. That the way that the airport was saved was with an American missile. Mm-hmm. So we're involved. And
There was that, I don't know for sure that it'll end up going through, but there was that gigantic weapons deal that he pushed for in the wake of his weird crystal ball meeting with the Saudi officials. There was this other deal for billions and billions of dollars of tanks. We know that cluster munitions that have been used in Yemen were supplied by the US. There was an attempt to stop those sales. But then the politicians said that that would stigmatize a weapon that in the right circumstance can lower civilian casualties. Yes, that's what cluster munitions are for, making sure that the wrong person doesn't die. We are wrapped up in this thing. I mean, the situation in Yemen is about as rough as it gets around the world, other than maybe Syria. And we're a part of that. And he, for whatever reason, whether it's ideological, whether it's business, is going right along with it. And I agree, Iran, that is the big factor here, because that's lurking in the background of this entire Saudi-Yemen conflict. If that goes from being a proxy war effectively, or a half proxy war, to a full-on war between Saudi Arabia and Iran, then you're talking about some serious damage there, because both of them obviously have significant militaries. And I agree with your initial evaluation. I don't know enough about this situation to talk about it, but I guarantee that what I've just told you is greater than the understanding that our president has of this situation. So I feel like he is literally playing with fire when he is blanket signing on to these sorts of purges and all that.
Well, and it's interesting too, like one thing that we skipped over that is kind of strange is that all of these people that have been arrested are being held in the Ritz-Carlton.
Yes.
So nice jail you got there, Saudi Arabia. But
well, they are some of the richest people in the world. I guess they have an expectation of luxury.
Yeah, and they're getting it.
Yeah.
But that same hotel, there had been this big business conference the week before. And there's a lot of talk about Saudi Arabia's state-owned oil company. Trump wants them to offer shares up in the US stock exchange. Like that's the other thing he's talking about. So he is a business guy.
Yeah.
Like that is his whole persona. And so when I look at this and I see him talking about oil and just praising the king, like I'm thinking that we'll understand Trump much better if we follow the money.
Yeah.
The warring stuff, I just I don't think he understands it enough. So I just take everything he says with a grain of salt, and I just hope to God the rest of the world does too.
Yeah, I'm a little bit worried that the State Department might be run like Trump steaks.
State Department's being run by ExxonMobil.
Yeah.
So the fact that there's
an
oil thing here too.
And it's being skeleton run by ExxonMobil.
Yeah, and just the oil factor, I don't know what the hell is going on, but it smells like fossil fuels. That, and it just makes me really nervous.
That is certainly true. And look, it's been obviously not just a dangerous situation, it's been a deadly situation. As I said, over 10,000 civilians have died. That is something that continues to this day. It's a situation where if you were to go around the country and you were to talk to people about this conflict and our role in it, no one would understand why we are in the position that we're in. I'm not just talking about like hippies. You go to the strongest Trump supporter in the world, and if you don't prime them with Donald Trump loves these dudes, because that will help, they'll be able to swiftly turn around on Saudi Arabia then. If you just talk to them about the situation, why do they want our money being spent in support of this conflict in a part of the world 50% of the population couldn't find on a map, that ideologically they're inherently opposed to, that's killing civilians? Why would anyone be in support of that? And I don't understand why it's the uniform position of our current executive branch to do this with no pushback from the population when there's no support amongst the population.
But it's been like this for decades. So, I mean, us and the Saudi Arabian family, the Bushes, I mean, they hold hands. Yeah. So, I mean, this goes back a long way. It's not just Trump. So he might just be doing what we've been doing the whole time because he doesn't understand it. But I know that the general population doesn't really understand it. I mean, you and I pay a lot of attention to this, and we're still just like,
yeah, exactly.
So how is the average voter supposed to know what's going on?
One piece of good news that I did find in my research, though, is this this crown prince who's been the driving force behind those purges, who appears to be setting himself up for an uncontested coronation, I guess, when his father passes. Apparently recently pledged $50 billion in investments into renewable energy.
Oh,
yeah, they're beating us in that area anyway.
He does want.
They're also letting women drive in June, so that's a good thing. Sure, they're killing thousands of Yemenis, and they're rounding up and perhaps executing their political opponents, but the driving's progress.
There's that.
There is that.
I also think it's interesting that he's 32. He's younger than me.
Yeah, he's a regular Jared Kushner over there.
Yeah, like Saudi Arabia's being run by a kid. So is North Korea. Yeah. Like, how is this happening?
It's amazing how as you age, what you consider to be a kid continues to change. Because yes, I too think 32. Oh my God, I wouldn't trust you to do anything at 32. You're running a country.
Yeah.
But that's the way it runs. And ours is being partly run by Jared Kushner, who's scarcely older. Thank you for joining me. Where can people see, or I would say listen to more of your work at the Congressional Dish?
My podcast is Congressional Dish. You can find it on iTunes, Google Play, soon to be Spotify, iHeartRadio, and anywhere else that podcasts are found.
And I won't spoil it, but she was telling me about a very interesting project that she might be launching on the podcast soon, which you are going to want to be a part of. So go take a look at that. Thank you for joining us for this first hour. We are going to take a little break, come back with a second hour. Lots more to be discussed. Don't go anywhere.